he'd come and shout and holler at her and how he was being abused and all this and that. And this particular Saturday, he called her on a Saturday afternoon. That night, around 7:15, I was in my bedroom and I heard this loud talk. So I got up and I went out and I says, "What in hell is all of this loud talk about?" "Well," he says, "we're just talking." I says, "Well, it's all right for you to talk, but," I says, "you cool down." And he hesitated a minute and he says, "You go along back to your bedroom." I says, "Listen, Tom, though, I'm not going back to my bedroom." And I told him, I says, "You're going to cool down." Well, he's got an awful temper. So when he went out in the trailer, there was a table, something like that, and some things on it, and he took his arm, brushed it down. Well, he was out the door before I could get to him to talk to him again. And so, I don't know. And I told Roberto, I says, "Get a restraining order and keep him away from here." But she didn't. They got two dogs. He'd come back and get the dogs for a while. And he.
Excuse me.
"Oh, that's all right. You can't hurt them." And so anyway, I told him, I said, "Tom," I says, "you know, I said right along that you two would never get along." I says, "I used to have a job, several jobs, where I had to judge somebody about as soon as I caught them. And then their boss was chiseling on one another. So this boyfriend that she had come in there, Grafton Smith. Quick as I saw him, I thought he was just a lazy sponger, which that's just what he turned out to be.
You got not only a pretty good judge of animals, a pretty good judge of people.
Yes. And so Grafton had a book there. They got a trailer there. Going to East Warren, you look up in back, and there's a kind of blue, light bluish one. And he had a book there, and well, come spring, we're going to have some patios put on here, and we're going to do some pruning. And I thought to myself, boy, you'll be gone before it comes to do any work, which his mother lives in England. His father's out west, raises quarter horses, I think. They'd separated. So anyway, Roberto had a girlfriend come there and stayed a week. And I was talking with her girlfriend. She knew Grafton. She says he's just a lazy good for nothing. Says he won't earn enough to make his own living. And there he was coming there with Roberta, and they had fancy meals like shark steak and salmon steak and all this and that for meals. And that's another thing that you can tell that I judged him on. When they'd get groceries, he'd come in empty-handed. Roberta would be carrying them.
You look for the little signs, I guess.
The little things add up to be quite a lot sometimes. And Tom, he turned out to be just what I thought he was. And yeah, I must tell you about when I was working at Middlebury Inn one time. Joe Orzel, he was a dentist down in West Rutland, I think. His brother had a store in West Rutland. And so Joe and I, two bellhops on it at the same time. Joe and I was one. So this car drove up and it was, last of August, September. A kind of oldish couple you could see. So it was Joe's, we called him Fronts. It was his turn. So he went out. And so the old lady looked, I stood by the door, opened the door when he came in with the luggage. And so this old lady looks up, says, "Get yourself down here and help this boy with all of this luggage." And I thought, oh boy. And but I didn't, because we knew, had an understanding between one another. So he checked him in. I opened the door. And so I checked in. After a while, they came back down into the lobby. And I told Joe, I said, "You know, I think we've got something on our hands. But I says, you know what I'm going to do? I says, I'm going to really plaster it on for that old lady, which I did. They come downstairs in the morning, I'd get a daily paper and I'd pass it to them if they wanted it. They did not put it back, and I did really plaster it. And you know, when she left a $10 bill for each one of the bellhops and the desk clerks.
How nice.
But that would happen to be her way.
Yeah, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Now, when did you work at the Middlebury Inn? Was this before the war, or?
Yeah. Yeah, that was back in my younger day. Yeah. I went to work as a waiter on the terrace.
At the Middlebury Inn?
Yeah, and then Vinton Dickey was the manager. And he was a good manager. And so he says to me, he says, how about, Ballet, would you like to be a bellhop? I says, if there's more money, well, he said, there is. So he put me on a bellhop, and Joe and I was teamed up. And that was before the field house in Middlebury was built. And they used to have the formals and things at the inn.
Oh.
And back then, Joe and I used to be way upstairs, the third floor. And so when they had something like that, Dickie would call us on duty and put the other two guys off. And one night, there was a formal there. I forgot which it was, but anyway. And he and I made $21 each in just tips back then.
Wow.
But boy, we was.
And that was when, about?
That was, when was that? Well, I'll tell you what, I had a Ford, two-door Ford, maroon color, which was a 36. So that must have been 38, 39, somehow, something like that.
Yeah, the whole pay structure's changed today.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you must have seen huge changes in Warren.
Oh, yeah.
Or East Warren.
Up in where Sugar Bush is, that was after, well, I tell you, before this. When I got out of service, I went to work for the unemployment service. Put me in Montpelier, another Pat Delvecchio and I, Montpelier for training for the unemployment. Then they put me down to Bennington as veterans representative. And back then, that was when you couldn't get on about so much gas and this and that and the other thing. So I quit there and came to Middlebury to Brandon to the Ayrshire Breed Association. And my job there was final checking all the papers before they was mailed. I had two girls that made the changes of the typewriter. And then I ran due to the deal in service, I had to get out in the fresh air. So I told my wife that came over to see my folks, I said, I'm going over and see this Arthur Mobus. Did you meet Warren Mobus in Warren yet?
I've heard about...
Well, it was his father. And his father, brother, had the farm where Levinsky was, where the big barn burnt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was Fred Mobus, and that's where the Mobus family grew up. And so I went over and I says to Arthur, I says, well, I said, I come over to see if you want to sell your farm. He says, I do. I ended up, I gave $9,500 for 200 acres, two horses, 40 thread of livestock, and what machinery. Mobus never spent a cent to improve anything, and that includes the buildings. There was a round barn there.
Oh, really?
Like what's on the Jocelyn farm. But it was in such bad shape, I had it tore down.
When was that built, do you figure?
Gee, I don't know.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, round barn. There was a horse barn. But the house had to be roofed and new plumbing. Big expense right off the bat. And with the family that I had, we didn't have money enough to improve much afterwards. So, but my daughter has a house now, so.
Well, did you live there for a long time, or?
Came there March 15th, 1946.
And stayed?
Yeah.
So you farmed there?
Yeah. And then, as I say, besides the dairy, I took that job of skin logs with that horse. And after that, before the milk bulk tanks came in, it was the jugs in Barrie where they had the real ice cream, mm-hmm. came into this area to pick up milk. And I told them, I said, you could have my milk provided, and I can have the job picking it up with my truck. And boy, those cans, you know, about this high, 40 quarts, 2 pounds to the quart, and each can weighed 25, 28 pounds, and the truck was up like this. And Walter Ladd and Barrie used to bring in from another route, and I've seen him since. He says, I don't know how you ever stood it, as small as you are. So you see the cans and the milk was over 100 pounds apiece.
Gosh, how long did you do that for?
Oh, a couple of years. And then I sold out to Ricketts, Thelma Ricketts' husband, for their son, Clyde.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Alden Bettis.
Yeah, he used to. That was before my time.
And yeah. Then Nelson Patch.
Nelson Patch for a long time. He went to work for Herb Smith, which lived in, Nelson Patch. We have a trading post, 6:30 to 7 now, from Waterbury. Nelson Patch had a camper on the sale. He lives in Warren.
Mm-hmm. I talked with him.
Yeah. He was kind of upset when you take a customer away from him.
Mm.
In fact, he gave me a shove against the wall one time. Nelson Patch married sister to Jess Cody.
And Don Cota, too, who was Earl Fuller's son-in-law.
Yeah, Don Cody married Earl Fuller's daughter.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Ruth.
Yeah, Ruth. Yeah.
Yeah, people have suggested I see Jess Cody, Cota, I think. He's still alive, right?
Yeah.
Would he be a good person to talk?
You know, another thing. Yes, that makes me think about Jess Cody and this Howard Kenyon and a few people. These artificial smiles, watch out for.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Jess Cody's got, his older brother was Don, and then I think Kenneth Cody lives just past the opposite from the town hall in Warren Village. And Kenneth Cody, then I think Jess Cody. Jess Cody married Jack Lara's sister.
Oh.
Yeah. I'll get to talking, I can think of a lot of things.
Well, I think it was Jess Cota or Don Cota or all of their grandparents that lived on the mountain when there was the mudslide. Did you ever hear about that?
That could be. I'm not sure.
Or it may have been their great-grandparents.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Get your brain rolling. You can come up with a lot of things.
That's what's good about talking for a while. Did you ever go to kitchen junkets? And
back years ago, they did have some. But working with my father, we got exercise enough during the day, so we didn't go to too many.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Pitching hay. Yeah. Well, here's another thing. Just south of the new barn from there down to the stone wall, we used to rake with a dump rake. I got skin cancer from too much sun. Anyway, my father had this bay horse that got from Harry Harvey in Waterbury. He was on a milk route in Boston, the horse was. Well, I used to rake down and back and down again, and I'd tumble ahead of him, put tumbles here, leave away, and talk to that horse. He'd come up through alone. And then I'd go down and back down again, and that made about a load of hay. But you had to pitch it in and lift it up onto the wagon. And think of these old stone walls they used to build for fences. Now electric wire. So much different. People worked back then. You ask a lot of young people to work like that today, they pass you up. Yeah.
Well, in many ways, you must have, when you changed over to tractor, you must have missed working with horses.
I really did. To this day, I'd prefer horses. Yeah, and over towards the airport, you go down a hollow and up a little bit, and then way up in the field, they put on the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Was there some pictures. And they wanted a scene of a barn raising like they used to have years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I took two of my horses over there, and I had to put on a... they had some older jackets to wear and things. And my pictures are down at Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., so they tell me.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Of the barn raising?
Well, they had just a few timbers there. Hitched the two horses onto it and skid them around and things like that. It wasn't much of a, I wouldn't say much of a scene, so that you'd know what it really was. So.
Did you used to move houses too? Didn't they move houses with oxen?
Oh, yeah. You know how the post office out in Warren Village?
Yes.
The first house past the post office.
Yes.
Was moved from down, you know, out of the cement bridge, Warren Village?
Yes.
Well, let's see now.
Is that Thelma Neal's house?
This would be right in Warren Village. Across on this side, there was the lady that runs the store, Carol, what is her name?
I don't know.
Owns the house, she lives there. And across the road, there's a kind of a bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
Where that bandstand sat, the house just past the office, post office, was sitting there.
I'll be darned.
My father Bing Jones, which was Robert's father's Jones Lumber Company it was. And Bing Jones, Bob Jones's father, Bob is dead now, he used to be the postmaster there, and Bing Jones used to be RFD man. And had a pair of horses. I think it was six horses pulled that building up to where it was.
That must have been quite a sight.
They had big round rollers, you know, they're putting under, and skids under the house, and then the rollers, skids on the rollers. And,
gosh.
Yeah. But I heard my father, this pair of red roan mares was when they used to use on the roller. Back in the 20s, he gave $750 for that pair. That was real big money then. It used to be, it was H.M. Farnham in Montpelier, going toward North Hill up top the hill there. And now it's Stanley Farmer, I think Stanley and Hector both are dead now. H.M. Farnham was Horace Farnham, horse dealer. Had him come in from the west on the freight train, and that's where my father bought him.
He was a big horse dealer, wasn't he, Farnham?
Yes, he was. Yeah, they used to, I never happened to see it, but I've heard him tell about take the horses from the train down the street and hitch one horse behind the other, hitch a lead rope to the front horse's tails. And that's how they used to get them up to the stable.
Is that right? Well, Earl Fuller said that he had worked for Farnham. And I think, well, he said that he made a trip out west with him once. I don't know whether...
That could be. Of course, those Fullers are all... You can't depend on them too much. And some people thought this Lauren was a lot better, but I told them, I said, they all are related, come from the same place. So.
Well, I was told today that Lauren sold the same piece of property twice.
His brother, Claren, was the Ripper. There used to be a fellow by the name of Coburn, Coburn's Market, Montpelier. He sold them a pair of oxen, butchered them. Come to find out, he stole them out of somebody's pasture.
And what happened?
I don't remember.
Gosh.
Yeah, like Earl stealing his father's cow and having it in his own barn. Gee. But, you know, I've got to say, Claren treated me all right. And Earl treated me good, too. So you can't say too much against him.
And I guess Floyd is still around.
Who?
Floyd.
Floyd, he's over in Randolph. I have lifetime members, charter member of the Mad River Driving and Riding Club.
Mm-hmm.
Floyd Fuller does. Well, he wanted me to go to a meeting up here to the Laurel Farm.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of people mentioned it twice to me, so I went up and wanted me for this and that and the other thing, and so they had Floyd there. And I thought, well, knowing the family, if they're going to have Floyd there for one of the leaders, why, I'll forget it, which I did. I've never been since. Because if I'd started telling this or that, the other thing, I'm sure he would have followed me up. So, but, no, I never have run across any horse that I have not used. My father taught me how to shoe horses. We had this little Morgan mare. My brother, started to Norwich University back then, had horses, and the freshman could not use the government horses. So my father bought this little Morgan mare, and boy, I'm telling you, just like that. And she would, boy, if you get onto her, quick, you got that foot into one stirrup, you better be ready to, because she was gone. And they took her over there for polo in Northfield. She too, super polo pony. And boy, it was, and we raised some colts from her. And when I was at the Middlebury Inn, there was a guy came along, wanted to go know about the Morgan Farm, Weybridge. And then I told him that my father had a couple of Morgan, registered Morgans. And so he said he'd like to see them. Well, anyway, I sold those two to this man. He was from Plymouth, New Hampshire.
Uh-huh.
And we delivered them over there. Yeah, he preferred those two from the ones in Weybridge.
That's a nice compliment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was. They was both real well-bred, built, very attractive. So
your father trained horses for other people as well?
No.
No?
Just his own. But what I was going to tell you, and this Morgan mare my brother had over in Northfield there, she got to banging her rear ankles, made spots that big around. So we took her to the Fullers, and they said they could stop it, but they never did. They even filed off the hoofs and made them smooth, which That was good. But then I brought her down to up here. There was Clifford Durkee. He was in service, and he used to do the shoeing. And he says, well, he says, I'm going to tell you, I used to bring her down for him to shoe her. And he says, I'm going to trim her feet different. He says, I'm going to leave the inside, not take any off in this, but take it here so it tip the ankles out on both of them. And then he says, I'm going to, instead of plates on the feet, says, I'm going to put corks on. So he put the cork, instead of right in front, put it around here. And so when she picked up her feet went around like that, he stopped her. So, what is this guy? He shoots horses here in the valley. Anyway, he lives out in Montpelier. He's got the super rig. It's a rig made of purpose for people that shoe horses. The place, instead of having a forge and things, run by gas, and that's a place about that square.
Uh-huh.
Puts it in, turn on the gas, and heats it red hot, and then shapes it up on an anvil. So I up to King, which is a lawyer. He and his wife are both lawyers here in town. And so I went up there, and I had some hoof nippers and things I wanted to sell. I didn't need, would never use. So it bothers me to think I can't think of names. But anyway, went up, and they had a horse, a gray one. On each ankle, I had spots like that where they interfered. And so I, that's funny. But anyway, I told him, I says, that horse has really interfered sometime. He said, yeah. I said, you know how to stop that, don't you? He says, well, he says, there's several different ways. And I told him about what I'd learned from this Clifford Durkee. He says, I never heard of that before. Well, this is Trey, it's here at work, so I guess it must have worked.
Yeah, you know, the thing that has interested me is that the old ways passed down often have very simple solutions that nobody thinks of.
That's right.
And of course, that's also what I'm interested in.
Look at medication. See the old, herbs and things that they used to use. And like you have a pneumonia, what was it, a plaster Paris they put on your chest. And I'm telling you, I've got 9 kinds of medicine that I'm taking there. Some of them are 3 and 4 times a day. And I don't know.
Did your mother used to collect herbs and stuff?
No, she used to have this. Was it mustard they used to have for plaster Paris?
Mustard plaster, yeah.
Yeah, things like that.
And sulfur in the spring, tonic?
Well, like on my father, cattle have this barn itch, they call it. My father used to take sulfur and lard, mix it together and rub it all over. That was a cure. Now you have to have some special medication. It costs a lot of money. Yeah.
But that worked well for the barn itch.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a lot of things you can, even to this day, like, I carry the nitro pills. Got one here, one under my pillow, one in the bathroom, and where's the fourth one? Anyway, I got 4 of them. So one night, I think I took 6 of them. Had these pains. So my doctor says, you know, you shouldn't take over 3. I says, well, I says, I did, and I'm still here. So, but I says, it stopped the pain each time. So it's, but some people can endure so much more than others. Did you hear about this little baby being born without brain?
Yeah.
It died, you know.
I heard that, yeah.